Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. About to have a series of conversations here on the air the next couple hours. We're going to start with a really interesting one from very different perspectives. David Swanson, who wrote the book War is a Lie, and Sam Faddis, who is a former CIA special ops officer who wrote Willful Neglect, The Dangerous Illusion of Homeland Security, talking about Osama bin Laden, where America is today, and what just took place, and what the future may hold. That's the first half hour. Then we have a great deal more in the next 2 hours, so stay with us for an interesting couple of hours. But first, let's check, for those of you living in around Baltimore, let's check on the roads around here and see what's happening. Make sure you get home safe. We'll be right back, so please stay with us. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this evening. We are going to have a very interesting first half hour here before we meet some vets who are putting on an interesting play about experience of being vets, and then talk to Lester Spence about an African-American perspective on President Barack Obama, Osama bin Laden, and the state of America. But first, we talk with David Swanson, whose most recent book is War is a Lie. He's author of Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. And Sam Faddis is a former CIA Special Operations officer, author of the book Willful Neglect, The Dangerous Illusion of Homeland Security. And Sam and David, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Hey, great to be here.
Thank you.
And Sam, I hope all is well with you and your son.
Doing well. He's recuperating nicely.
Good. That's good. It was an interesting juxtaposition to have the two of you on, and not to go at it head-to-head and scream and yell, which we don't do much here, but to kind of really different perspectives, I think. Maybe we'll find out differently. But when you look at what the United States just did with Osama bin Laden, there are some saying that that this could have been avoided altogether in the very beginning, and that this doesn't really change the equation of what we have to face in the future, and question the assassination of Osama bin Laden, the killing of Osama bin Laden. Others saying this is what this shows that President Barack Obama went out ahead of where President Bush was. This is something that had to be done, and has sealed part of the issue we face since 9/11. And so I just like to both get you initially the analysis that both you have about what this means and portends for the United States of America. Let me start with David Swanson, then we'll go to Sam Faddis.
Well, you're talking about someone who is accused of having committed horrible crimes. What you are supposed to do with such a person is put them on trial, and if possible, convict them and punish them appropriately, and thereby strengthen the rule of law and deter future crimes. Instead, you spend 10 years killing people rather recklessly, well over a million dead Iraqis, countless dead Afghans, and global terrorism increasing, predictably enough, during this so-called global war on terror. And then when you come around to it, you know, 9.5 years later, it's not the wars. It's investigations, it's a raid, and then rather than capturing him, you kill him. And you start out, you know, claiming he was fighting back and holding his wife in front of you, and then you claim he was unarmed, but you just had to kill him for some reason. These strike me as not very intelligent policies all the way around. And then in the course of those 10 years, you've changed U.S. culture and ethics to the point where people accept not just aggressive wars, but torture and lawless imprisonment and murder. And you have people screaming and cheering in the streets for the murder of an alleged criminal that produces wonderful propaganda films for the people who will see him as a martyr. It strikes me as incredibly destructive and disastrous.
Sam Faddis.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of ground to cover there. I have all kinds of reservations, as I think we've discussed many times before, about how we've prosecuted this war, if we still call it that. In regard to this specific action, I mean, I think they did exactly what they had to do, and I just get really nervous when people start talking about capturing people and this kind of thing. I mean, it's. I don't know exactly what happened in that house. What I do know from a lot of experience is that things like this are never nearly as clean or as antiseptic or as controllable as people would like or as I would like to believe. So, I mean, I think this was the action that the president needed to take precisely, on this specific issue going after Osama.
Sam, let me ask you this. Let's go back to David. I mean, we've heard different stories. I mean, one is that this was a kill mission from the beginning, and in the beginning we heard this was going in to either capture or kill Osama bin Laden. If it was, in fact, what we call a kill mission, did that make sense? I mean, would it be, why, from your perspective, why would it not have been better to have captured Osama bin Laden and put him on trial?
I'll give you a couple of answers to that. I mean, one is this. I mean, I think when you have a guy who is the head of a terrorist organization and he is directly involved in the activities of that organization, which is attacking people, killing people, committing murder, I think under any interpretation of the law of war, he's made himself a target. So in terms of legal issues as to whether he can be, you know, you're under some compulsion to attempt to arrest him, I don't think in this situation there's really a legal argument to be made. Why would you want to kill him even if you could capture him? You know, I don't know. I guess I could conjure up some very cold-blooded reasons, which are complete speculation, because you don't want to conduct a big trial, because you don't want to because you don't want to have the attention, because you want it over, because you think that that's, quite frankly, cleaner, because you have an administration that has made a big issue out of, that has now found itself in a position as a result of a whole series of events where it's kind of almost impossible for them to prosecute or process or even figure out what to do with people they capture. So that we're in this weird situation now where, in some ways, this sounds very horrible, that it's easier and cleaner to kill the guy than it is to put your hands on him. And again, that's just speculation.
David?
I think the cleanliness of murder is Nazi talk. I mean, I find it disturbing. I think that it's entirely possible that people with the best intentions in a difficult crisis situation the other day ended up having to kill him, but to take it on faith that because it was the U.S. government doing it, they must have done the right thing. That's faith. That's not thinking. I think they didn't want a trial. I think that they didn't want to dredge up our decades-old support for him. I think they didn't want to dredge up the failures to prevent 9/11. And I think that they didn't want to give him a mock trial. And if they'd given him a fair trial, how would they avoid the argument that we have to give other people fair trials, too? I mean, it's very, very messy. Nothing clean about it at all, and murder is cleaner in this way of thinking. But when you take away rights from somebody, when you say, well, he was so evil that he didn't have any rights, we aren't obliged to give him a trial, we're at war with him, you see that over the course of the past decade, that thinking has moved all the way to Americans, to encompass all of us. And the current president has announced that he can assassinate Americans as well. We have a member of the army, a whistleblower named Bradley Manning, who clearly has no rights whatsoever in our legal system. So once you start down this path of thinking people don't have rights, we can murder them, and that's cleaner, it moves very quickly to stripping away all of our rights, even about the people that we supposedly care about.
I, on the way to open the phones, Keith, you're the first caller. I'm going to come right to your call. Just wanted to ask you, David, then what would you have done when it comes to Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda? I mean, you're taking for a moment the war in Afghanistan out of the equation for a moment. Just looking at Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, what would you have had the American government do?
The Taliban was open to turning him over, at least to a third country,
and later
to the United States, to be put on trial, both before 9/11 happened and after. If that was not acceptable, you could certainly have attempted to do what was done this week 10 years ago. And if it took you 10 years, okay, it took you 10 years, but did you have to launch a war on the world in the meantime? You know, a friend of mine tweeted quite humorously the other day, you know, a lot of Americans are angry that it took 10 years to do this, but they're grateful that such care was taken that nobody else got hurt in the process. Well, of course, millions of people got hurt in the process. And then to declare victory and to declare that everything we've been doing for the past 9.5 years is somehow justified by the fact that they finally went after the guy who was such a piece of propaganda to start the whole thing. It is a little disturbing. Bush admitted he wasn't interested in going after bin Laden. Bin Laden served him better as propaganda alive than dead.
Sam, let me go to the phones here. I'm curious what you would have done differently.
Would have done differently in this operation?
Yeah.
I don't think that I would have done much very differently in this situation, Mark. I do not personally know what the specific direction given to the operatives was. So I do not, that by the operators, I mean the SEALs who went into the building. So I do not know it as a fact that they were told, kill this guy, that's it. So I don't know that they weren't given the option of capturing him. I most certainly would not have sent them into the house with directions that they must capture him, if that distinction is clear. In other words, that I would not have put them in a situation in which they would have then been forced to take actions which are happening in microseconds, where they're putting themselves at risk for the purpose of attempting to get this guy out alive. I mean, this guy, in my mind, is an enemy combatant. He has attacked and killed American citizens. He is directing a war against the United States. I don't see any legal issue with considering him to be an enemy combatant. He has made himself a target.
I'm going to give us the phones here. When we come back, I want to explore with the both of you what you think America does from here. And I'll describe that in better detail after this phone call. 410-319-8888. Keith in Northeast, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon,
first
Keith.
Of all, I want to say to your guest, the first guest, you know, I don't really mind the fact that he's a complete pacifist and a piece of, well, I'm not even going to say the other way, he's a pacifist. But let me tell you something. He's a coward, because you know why? He likes to live here in America under our freedom, under our protections. But if you don't like how everything is going here, why don't you move to the Sudan?
Keith, let me just interrupt 1 second. Keith, I really do like to give people all the room they have to talk, but attacking folks is not, that doesn't help the process of conversation. But, well, I mean, I'm sure you have more to say than that. Keith, you still there?
Do you really think that having this guy put on trial? I mean, I can see if this guy had massacred a village. I'm telling you, this guy is wild all over the world. Killed 3,000 people at one time. I mean, what does he think? He thinks that we're supposed to put him on trial. This guy was wanted for murder, dead or alive. That's what happened. And I'm sorry, Mark, but I love your show. But, you know, if people like this get on him, it is complete lunacy, man.
Well, okay, let me ask you two this question. Well, let's go to, well, because this is the next call after this question. So here's where we are now. We have Obama, Osama bin Laden dead, who is, if anything, I think of him as the symbolic embodiment of terror. And that's about the extent, I think, of where he was at that moment when he was killed. And you still have a war going on in Afghanistan. We still have troops going on in a war in Iraq. Hamid Karzai is saying, you see, they were never here in Afghanistan. They were in Pakistan. This is absurd. Stop fighting in Afghanistan. You've got Pakistan not talking to Afghanistan about negotiating with Taliban and saying enough with the war in Afghanistan. And you've still got the issue of groups that are fomenting terror around the world. On the other side of that, you've got Arab uprisings across the globe, across the Middle East, that are really inspired – I think, inspired many ways by the legacy of 1776 and the desire for freedom in the world, in an emotional sense, in a visceral sense. And so I'm curious where you think we go now. I mean, where is it America takes itself in terms of our relationship to the rest of the world? And you both of you men are, I consider, very progressive thinkers, but from very different perspectives. And so I'm curious to see where you both would advise that we go now. David, and then Sam, and then back to the phones.
Well, I don't need to do much advising. I'm with the majority of Americans on where we go now. I think if we had any respect for the notion of democracy, which we wave around as we engage in these wars, we would be right on the right track. You know, we have 2/3 to 3/4 of Americans wanting out of Afghanistan. So do I. Get out of Afghanistan doesn't mean abandon the place. It means use other forms than killing and bombing people to relate to that country, to provide aid and guidance and direction as useful to the people who run, who should have a voice in running that country and currently don't. And that means get out of bombing Pakistan. It means get out of Iraq. It means get out of Libya, which Americans have been smart enough to turn against faster than any previous war. It means get out of arming and supporting dictators around the region and stop being on the wrong side of this Arab Spring and indeed be inspired by it. Bring that inspiration home. But the American people are in the right place. Maybe most of them, according to your recent caller, should leave the country. But most Americans are in the right place. They want to end this madness, and they want to seize this symbolic opportunity, nonsensical as that would be, to end this madness just as we should have ended it last week.
Sam?
Well, I think that Osama's killing is a significant thing. Even if he's not operationally running the outfit, really hasn't been for some time. That's a major blow, but it doesn't end the conflict, and people will take his place, and the threat has continued to evolve. So you know we're going to be faced with this for some time to come. As I've noted many times, I agree that there are a number of things that we have done over the last 10 years in terms of use of force, the way we've chosen to use force, that have, I think, been really counterproductive and not very intelligently thought out. I mean, Afghanistan, to me, is an example of that. We went to Afghanistan with a very small number of people to address a very specific threat and what had just happened to the country, and then somehow that's morphed into an effort with 100,000 guys to, you know, I mean, I don't know, build a nation that where there's arguably, only arguably a country to begin with, and all sorts of other things that don't have much of anything to do with Al-Qaeda, and in some cases probably are counterproductive. So, you know, I mean, to grab a hold of one piece of that. In Afghanistan, I think what we need to do is we need to find a way to get out. And I agree, and I don't mean like anybody, I don't mean just walk away and leave the place in anarchy. But I think we do need to abandon the notion that we are going to somehow transform Afghanistan into a fully functioning Western nation state, and really ratchet down our expectations and remember why we went there in the first place and reduce our footprint and start putting ourselves on a glide path to leaving that place. I mean, leaving it stable, but stop thinking that we're going to accomplish what is a generational task in the space of 18 months or 2 years.
410-319-8888. And Catherine, you're on the air.
Okay, thank you for taking my call. This mm-hmm. is a very interesting discussion. And our foreign policy, we definitely need to try to understand what direction we're going in with foreign policy. But I would like to say that conflict is a part of the human experience. And the issue is resolution. How do you resolve conflict, especially on that scale? And regarding Osama bin Laden and war has been around since I'm a 49-year-old woman. Since I was born, there has been war. And also, regarding Osama bin Laden, he respectfully and very proudly announced that he was in charge of the operation, the successful operation, might I say, to fly planes into American to our city and to destroy Americans. He said that he did that very proudly, very respectfully, and said that he would continue to do that because we were infidels and he just did not like America, although I know America has had past relationships with Osama bin Laden. So I guess I'm calling to say that do I support murder? No. I had a very young nephew who was murdered at 16. I do not support murder. There's local terrorism that's happening in our cities every day. I definitely do not support that. But as a country, we have to understand how to resolve conflict. And this situation, I do believe, was allowed to happen pre-9/11 because Clinton was trying to brief Bush, and Bush did not take heed. And that's my comment.
Thank you so much, Catherine.
You're welcome.
David Swanson, I mean, this is it's the situation that, that I think people on the left find themselves in sometimes is difficult in that, I mean, that most people are against both these wars and think we need to get out of there now, out of both countries, Iraq, Afghanistan, come back. The Iraq never made sense to people. I think Afghanistan made sense to most Americans in the beginning, makes no sense to most Americans now. And support the idea of hunting down Osama bin Laden. So the question is, when you're in dialogue with the American people, it makes sense of that for them since your perspective is a little different.
Well, you know, you're right. You had polls showing a majority wanting to go into both of those countries. And then after some years, you had a majority saying we never should have gone in. And so you had people come to the realization that it was a bad idea too late. And I think they're right to come to that realization, but we should have been there at the start. And, of course, the excuses come and go. So it's all about the weapons in Iraq, and then nobody believes the lies about the weapons anymore, but you have different reasons for staying in Iraq. It's all about bin Laden in Afghanistan and sort of in Iraq, too, and yet he hasn't been there in 9 years, and you come up with different reasons to support the troops and finish the mission and all of this nonsense to keep the wars going with different justifications, and eventually against the will of the public. So you have a majority not buying the old lies, not buying the new lies, and wanting to end the wars, and it just doesn't matter to the war machine in Washington, which just churns along. And that's not in our genes. It's not a law of physics. It's a bunch of corrupt people in our nation's capital looking out for their own political and profitable interests rather than paying attention to us, you know. And wars have existed in some societies and not others. They have not been present in most of human history. And to say that, you know, we've had wars for my lifetime is a reason to keep them going is nonsense. You know, I mean, slavery used to be part of the human condition. We got rid of it. We can get rid of wars. We just have to choose to do so.
Now, your thoughts on that idea, Sam?
Well, look, I think that the first thing you ought to do anytime you start thinking about going to war or start getting into armed conflict with another country is I think you ought to sit down and think again. You know, I think anybody who's in a hurry to go to war or get involved in armed conflict is probably somebody who's never been in one, because you know, it's not pretty and it's not glorious and horrible things happen to people. So I think we ought to be very, very, very cautious about when we get involved and look for all sorts of other opportunities. And having said that, I think that's all great. And there are unfortunately still some very ugly, very nasty people out there with whom you're not going to be able to discuss things and you're not going to be able to reach agreement. Osama bin Laden was one of those. And there are going to be times when you have to use force. And in those situations, what I would argue is you should therefore, when that comes to that and you've really thought it out and sober judgment has taught you, said that's what we're going to do, then you should go in. You should use all the necessary force to end it, and to decisively end it quickly, and then you should get out and move on. And then, again, think really hard before you ever allow yourself to get dragged back into it.
There's an interesting – David, I was thinking – both of you, but I was thinking about this piece that Ethelbert Miller, who's a chairman of the board of the Institute for Policy Studies – he's not writing this on their behalf, but as somebody, he considers himself on the left. And he wrote an interesting thing to us yesterday, and I'll just read this very quickly before we go off the air. We have last closing comments. He says, obviously, after reading a few essays by people on the left, that we are a movement that has problems responding to terrorism. Osama bin Laden's death brings some closure to a dark chapter in American history, but to some it seems as if the use of violence and power war is never justified. I just don't understand the logic. There is evil in the world. Sometimes you have to do bad things in order to do for good things to live. This is why so often many people do nothing. Fear? Helplessness? I think it's important to listen to the entire speech Obama made last night. We are not in a war against Islam. We are fighting a war in which our way of life must be protected. By any means necessary? Difficult. Yes, difficult. But who said breathing the air was easy? And I meant to start the show off that way, David, because I was curious your response to Ethelbert.
Well, you know, the only thing that killing bin Laden brings closure to is the desire to kill bin Laden. When we killed Saddam Hussein, that didn't end the violence in Iraq. It didn't make Iraq a pleasant place to live. If we kill Gaddafi, it won't end the war in Libya. It will make him a martyr, and the war will go on. You know, you can pick out evil people in the world. It's just that we always pick out the ones that our government isn't friends with. If we had wanted to pick out Hosni Mubarak and propagandize him as the latest Hitler, it would have been very easy to do. And in fact, people took action against him of a sort that in recent decades has proven to be far more effective. Nonviolent efforts to overthrow tyranny have over twice the success rate of violent ones. And so to say that my inclination is against violence is to incline toward a more effective response to evil things in the world. It's not to say evil doesn't exist or we should tolerate tyrants. You know, it's to say there are other strategies, which doesn't mean there might not be some case that could be found where you had to use violence in actual defense. It means that as a political strategy, we ought to be investing in learning how to use nonviolence rather than putting half our income tax and half our borrowing and all of our time and energy and all of our news coverage into violence. Which tends not to result in the closure of anything, and this one certainly will not. There is a vengeful response to come, to which we will respond with more vengeance if we don't learn better.
And very quickly, Sam, what David just said, a vengeful response to come, which I think many people think could happen, and is our response to go back in the way we did after 9/11, or is our response to do special ops, or is our response to do something else?
Well, look, I think it is entirely possible there will be future attacks, and I think we will have to respond to them. I would certainly argue that what we don't need to do is continue to get dragged into a business of responding in ways which are inappropriate and often an overreaction. So, for instance, as I've said many times, I think the use of conventional forces and means like that in response to terrorist attacks is really often counterproductive. You know, it ends up generating more hostility than, as I say, it's counterproductive. Not to mention that, my God, we can't afford to continue to do this, even if we were so inclined, you know, to just constantly wage war for the rest of the time. So I think we ought to be responding much more carefully and much more selectively, and I think probably the weapons of the future are intelligence officers and special operators, not carrier battle groups and armored divisions.
We're just about out of time, Dave. Unless you have a closing thought, we're going to close up and move on.
I'm delighted to say I agree.
Okay. David Swanson, War is a Lie. Sam Faddis, Willful Neglect, The Dangerous Illusion of Homeland Security. Thank you both so much for joining. It's been a pleasure to have you both in the airwaves with us this first half hour.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
We'll be right back. When we come back from this very brief break, we're going to meet some folks putting on a production called Telling Baltimore. These are veterans of both Iraq and Afghanistan, and people who lost people in 9/11 and people who lost children as soldiers in those wars, putting on a play, talking to the rest of our community. So stay with us for that. We'll be right back. Don't go away.